Hello, everyone. This is Don Jurgler, and welcome to the Insuring Cannabis Podcast, a bi-monthly trip into the intersection of two industries that couldn't be more different. Let's get into the topic of exclusions. Exclusions narrow the scope of coverage in an insurance policy by carving away coverage risks that insurers aren't willing to take on. But they aren't intended, for the most part, to give consumers the feeling a risk is protected when it's actually not. Unfortunately, in the cannabis industry, there appears to be no shortage of policies in place with exclusions that may leave these businesses more exposed than they realize. Now, some of this could be because business owners and insurance buyers in the budding cannabis industry aren't yet sophisticated enough to understand what they're getting or what they may need when they buy insurance. Beyond that, according to experts I've spoken with, oftentimes it's brokers, also new to cannabis, who aren't sufficiently familiar with their customers' needs or the policies they are selling. Perhaps the biggest problem is the nature of the business itself. Since cannabis is still illegal in the eyes of the federal government, exclusions that may be considered standard for most policies could effectively leave a cannabis company uncovered. An illegal acts exclusion may be one example. Just how often are cannabis businesses being sold policies with exclusions for risks that the buyers probably believe they are covered for? It's happening a lot more than you may guess, attorney Michael Sampson says.
I think a majority of cannabis-related businesses have something in their policy that raises a concern. I think that you can work very hard to curtail those concerns, but you know, I have yet to see the perfect policy. And so even if you can avoid things like the health hazard exclusion, or bigger exclusions, you know, there's smaller ones that may raise a concern, even if some small portion, for example, are vaping products, you may not be able to avoid some form of vaping exclusion. I think also the carcinogen exclusion, you know, is one, depending on how it's written, that can raise some concern. The ones that I've seen include ones that say, you know, you have no coverage for anything that causes cancer. Well, you know, the science is still developing around cannabis, and depending on whether or not it's an occurrence or claims-made policy and how quickly the science develops, that exclusion could come into play. So I don't think there's a perfect policy. Work very hard with clients to make sure we're getting the broadest coverage possible and reviewing those policies so we're not being tripped up by those types of exclusions. But it's definitely a risk and a peril to anybody who plays in this industry.
Let's not just take his word for it. I posed the same question to Phil Skaggs, Assistant Counsel for the American Association of Insurance Services. AAIS is a national insurance advisory organization, and they know quite a bit about policy forms and language.
100% of policies out there have language that can be potentially interpreted to exclude coverage for one aspect of their business or their operations.
How about one more? I spoke with TJ Frost, Vice President and U.S. Segment Leader at Hub International LTD, about exclusions and policies being sold to cannabis businesses.
Unfortunately, unless they're an expert in the field and reading policy forms, they don't know what they don't know, and they only know what their current broker tells them. So, you know, you really got to do a full analysis of what programs they're in. But we find coverage gaps in almost every policy that we see that's not currently with us.
Sampson is a partner in the Pittsburgh office of the law firm Leach Tishman. He's chair of the firm's insurance coverage group and co-chair of its cannabis group. To put it bluntly, it's his job to spot gaping holes in insurance policies.
We've seen a number of exclusions in various types of policies that give us pause. You know, early on, we saw policies marketed to the cannabis industry that actually would contain a cannabis exclusion or contain a health hazard exclusion. The health hazard exclusion is a big one that we've seen reoccur and can really negate potentially, arguably, large portions of coverage, rendering the coverage illusory. Beyond that, there's any number of exclusions, depending on the type of property or liability policy that's at issue, that creep up.
It's not just that some companies are being sold policies that are too broad. Often they're getting placed into policies that are entirely unsuitable for cannabis operations. Skaggs, our expert on policy language, can offer a view from down in the weeds.
So I'm seeing lots of different kinds of exclusions. And I think it's important to distinguish between exclusions that are in cannabis policies and then cannabis exclusions that are in commercial policies not intended to cover cannabis risks. I think there's problems in both categories, but sometimes those categories get confused or conflated. And I'm seeing, as far as common commercial policy exclusions that are in both kinds of policies, there's, of course, there's breach of contract, fungus, mold, and mildew, and spoilage. There's product recall. Of course, there's the controlled substances, contraband, or property in the course of illegal transportation or trade, criminal or dishonest acts. And then, of course, there's the more kind of nuanced, public policy exclusions, and then liquor liability and intoxication and impairment exclusions is kind of one category that have sometimes been liberally interpreted to apply to cannabis. Then there's the cannabis-specific exclusions that you see in, policies that are designed or intended to provide coverage to cannabis businesses. And these also kind of run the gamut, but they're pretty much vaporizing devices or hardware exclusions, product completed operations hazard exclusions, just where they cut out the entire product completed operations coverage to say there's none of that, which can be real pitfall for cannabis businesses thinking that they have product liability coverage. Then, as you mentioned before, the cannabis health hazard exclusion or chronic illness exclusion.
Frost is a broker with boots on the ground. He's encountered numerous cannabis companies that have been sold policies with a health hazard exclusion. And he's all too often come across vaping businesses with policies that have exclusions for vaping.
We're seeing a lot of vaporizer and component exclusions, battery exclusions, health hazard exclusions, which can list a bunch of different ingredients and or conditions that will nullify any claim. The vaporizer component exclusion is a big exclusion that people need to be aware of, especially with the cannabis industry trending in that direction more so than ever. They're susceptible and liable for more claims pertaining to vape cartridges and batteries. And then the health hazard exclusion, there's quite a few different variations of health hazard exclusions on different carrier forms. So we just need to make sure which exclusions are on that health hazard and what is what will deny that coverage.
Illegal acts is one exclusion you probably wouldn't find in many policies sold to cannabis businesses. That wouldn't make much sense, as the federal government considers cannabis to be illegal, right? Not so much. In 2013, U.S. Deputy Attorney James M. Cole sent a memo, now known as the Cole Memo, to all U.S. attorneys notifying them that, save for certain enumerated law enforcement priorities, the Justice Department would not enforce federal marijuana prohibition in states where it was legalized. However, the Cole Memo was rescinded by Attorney General Jeff Sessions in January 2018. That creates some noteworthy issues with directors' and officers' policies. Samson explains.
And then on the D&O side, you're definitely seeing coverage that would deny, would definitely see exclusions that would deny coverage for your quote-unquote illegal acts. Some of the exclusions are tied to or tailored to the same type of concerns that the Cole Memo was originally tailored to. So they are narrow, but I've also seen that in addition to those type of Cole Memo criteria, there's still broad language that, if literally applied, would basically say that if a D&O claim arises out of cannabis, there's no coverage. Obviously, that's what a cannabis business needs coverage for. All its issues are going to arise out of cannabis. And so I think it's particularly important in the D&O context to understand what you're getting or not getting. And then, I think also one of the ones that sometimes gets underlooked, if you will, or overlooked, I guess, is an insured versus insured exclusion, because in many of the instances, the policyholder is trying to cover multiple entities, and sometimes that's a management arm along with a dispensary, for example. And if the management is sued by the dispensary and there's an insured versus insured exclusion, that may kick in. So that's one that's a more general application, not specific to the cannabis industry, but because of the way in my experience, you know, the industry is structured, has come up more than once in working with clients.
Legalization has been spreading from state to state for a number of years now, so it's a bit soon to tell how many lawsuits centered around coverage exclusions will start popping up. But there are a few that are ongoing, and Samson believes we'll see more like them.
There have been limited cannabis-related insurance coverage lawsuits to date, a few more recently. Really, the two, though, that spring to mind are the Tracy decision out of the U.S. District Court for Hawaii, and then the Green Earth Wellness decision out of the U.S. District Court for Colorado. And those cases presented a hybrid, basically, of exclusions for the illegal acts exclusion, as well as a more general attempt to negate coverage based on public policy. Tracy involved a homeowner in Hawaii who had her cannabis plant stolen. In that case, the insurer under homeowner's policy denied coverage, and the U.S. District Court in Hawaii found that that was an appropriate denial based on the status of cannabis under federal law. A handful of years later, U.S. District Court for the District of Colorado and Green Earth Wellness really took a more holistic view, noted that time had passed since Tracy had happened, and looked at what it saw as the de jure versus de facto public policy in the United States when it came to cannabis. And from both a policy language standpoint and a public policy standpoint, enforced the insurance policy and required the commercial insurer to provide coverage to a cannabis operation in Colorado that had experienced loss and damage due to both a theft and separately a fire.
Back in 2018, AAIS introduced a Cannabis Business Owners Policy, or CANABOP. Even such a cannabis business-friendly policy has exclusions that may, on the surface, sound like head-scratchers. But they're in there by design, and for good reason, Skag says.
So in our CANABOP policy, we include a cannabis-related illness, sickness, or disease exclusion. And it applies to bodily injury, property damage, or personal advertising injury arising out of actual or alleged chronic illness, sickness, or disease, or aggravation of such sickness, illness, or disease, arising out of cannabis activities or exposure to cannabis or cannabis accessories. And for the purposes of this exclusion, chronic illness, sickness, or disease includes addiction or dependence, you know, birth defects or chronic prenatal injury, cancer or cancerous growths or conditions, depression or mental or neurological disorder or condition, or organ or arterial damage, disease, or condition. And so the point and the purpose of this, at first glance, it might seem like it's really eliminating coverage that the insured might expect to receive, but it's not. It's responding to, again, the same sort of known risks that apply to like the tobacco industry. We know from scientific studies that selling cannabis has this risk, that it has, there is a potential for dependence, there is a potential for birth defects, depending on how you consume it, it can cause cancer, et cetera, et cetera. Those kind of exposures are just not then within the gambit of what a carrier would intend to cover, right? They might defend against those claims, but when it comes to the actual judgment, they're not going to cover that liability. It's really just because it's a business risk. Getting into that, in the cannabis business, you know there's going to be a risk of people saying, well, I developed cancer because I was smoking your cannabis product. So there's other more specialized insurance that should be taken out for that kind of situation. But it wouldn't generally be covered under a general liability policy, again, because it's, you know, by its name, it's intended to cover your general exposures, not your very specific known high risk exposures.
Whenever he's taken on a new customer who's already had insurance, Frost is often faced with having to break some bad news to them. He has to tell them they may need to buy more coverage or explain to them that it is, for cannabis businesses anyway, just an imperfect world and something they have to deal with for the time being.
Some of the exclusions you can't get away from, but if you're aware of them, you can at least be wary of a claim were to happen. So we can't fix all the issues, especially operating in a non-federally regulated space. So you take what you can and you try and get away from the rest of them. So there are great carriers out there that love to do the space, and then there's some that are doing it just to take a dollar.
The insurance gaps being created by some of these exclusions that Frost is helping his new clients with are sizable. I asked him if, when he's working on ways to deal with all this, he takes his new clients to a carrier other than the one they've been working with, or if he just gets them more coverage to take up the gap.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's both. You know, if they're with a carrier that we see is suitable for their risk, but they didn't, but the current broker or placement facility did not negotiate terms and favorable forms, then we'll do that on their behalf. Most of the time, we find that the whole program is something that needs to be switched around, and so we'll take it from the ground up and put it in more of an inclusive and holistic program where they don't have coverage gaps, and that it would protect them if they were to have a claim.
Are new cannabis brokers a big part of the problem? I asked Skaggs.
Yes, I think one of the biggest issues in the cannabis industry now is not only policyholders not reading their own policies. That's kind of an issue that, you know, doesn't have an immediate solution. But yeah, agents and brokers who are pushing policies or, you know, placing policies that they just don't understand for one reason or another. Either they don't understand the cannabis industry and they don't know what they're looking for, or, you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt, they don't understand how the language has developed and how it could potentially be interpreted to exclude a huge aspect of a cannabis operator's business. I've had discussions with a lot of agents that you know, they're quick to call out the health hazard and controlled substances and criminal dishonest act exclusions and say, yeah, we don't include that, or I know to look out for that. But then they're completely blind to stuff like product recall and breach of contract and, you know, public policy exclusions and so forth.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Insuring Cannabis Podcast. You can find other episodes from this series by visiting insurancejournal.tv. Until next time, I'm Don Jurgler.